there, listeners. Welcome to episode 177 of Never on the Back Foot podcast. In a major update ahead of the Women's Premier League auctions, the BCCI announced that the final list of players set to be auctioned for the WPL 2023 has finally come. Now they've listed 409 players who are set to go under the hammer on 13th February 2023. Notably, the board also confirmed that the first edition of the WPL will start on 4th March and will go on till 26th March. On the podcast to join us for today's discussion, we have Jeet. He is a freelance strategy and recruitment consultant who works with players across the globe in men's and women's cricket. He is the co-founder of Cricket Queens and does the stats and analysis for the platform. Hi, Jeet. Welcome to Never on the Back Foot podcast. First things first, how are you doing today?
Hi, Nia. I'm doing really well. Exactly as most of the women's cricket followers would be doing right now with the WIPL and the T20 World Cup on the horizon. So, yeah, it's probably the best time to be a follower of women's cricket right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, before we get started with our topic, let's just give a layout of who you are to our listeners as well. So when did you, first start watching cricket? How did your interest develop?
So that's an interesting one. I think probably started when I was 8-9 years old. Mm-hmm. But then I kept off watching it and probably after the school was over, I got into different things. But I kept keeping a track of all the cricket games and everything and started my own blog and everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a while, but I think it's only been like 3 or 4 years since I've turned cricket into my profession.
Oh, wow. That's quite interesting. And since when have you, been following women's cricket and how did that interest develop and, nurture?
So, look, initially when I started cricket as a profession, it was primarily only men's cricket. Mm-hmm. But I used to keep a tab of women's cricket as well, all the games, but I did not used to watch all of them because not all were televised back then, nor were they live stream. But, being a follower of men's cricket, I thought I've covered enough, be it associates or the full members, whatever it is. So I was like, let's just, go a little more in-depth into women's cricket. So originally when I started on social media, it was an account purely dedicated to men's cricket. That's what I used to talk about. But then I used to slip in a couple of tweets about women's cricket as well. So one fine night, I was just sitting randomly and I was like, okay, so if I've got thoughts about women's cricket, let's create a new account altogether. And let's start that account and talk about it. Let's focus upon women's cricket. And then, as soon as I started that particular account, it was like full-blown women's cricket. The men's cricket dropped and the focus shifted to women's cricket, which I turned into more of my profession now.
I actually find that really fascinating, right? Because it was during the pandemic that, I started getting more and more into women's cricket because there's time at hand. I want to know more stuff. And that's when I actually came across, your profile, because now you have Twitter handles that's exclusively dedicated to men's and women's cricket. So how do you follow and, manage it all? It must get overwhelming, right?
Well, it kind of does. But when you are used to it, when you are probably, 7 or 8 years old, you kind of get a hang of it. Mm-hmm. So, and then look, like I said, it's become my profession now. So it's a lot more easier for me to follow it anyway. But yeah, look, if you say like a profession, if you like something, then nothing is so hectic for you. And that has pretty much been the case with me as well.
Right. It really doesn't feel like work. But I think what I also really like is how you actively contribute to even Cricket Queens, right? Now, you write about a myriad of women's cricket tournaments across the globe. And most notably, I've been following your work on Super Smash, So how does that pan out for you? And again, how was that experience like?
Look, Cricket Queens was actually a very interesting story. So we started that particular platform or whatever you want to call it as, website or whatever. We started that, I think, last year, probably in January. Yeah. And so the idea was pretty much similar. So somebody approached me. And what the individual approached me with was something very similar to what I used to run for men's cricket with a platform called Cricket Strategist. But then that never got into a full-blown thing because I had my other commitments as well. So, and then eventually it got lost and now it's pretty much dead since I was the only guy who had to manage it and it was too much for me. So, like, we started CQ, that is Cricket Queens, year ago. And the idea and the thought process pretty much match with my co-founder, who is Paulmi. People would know her as Cricktofer on Twitter.
Yes.
So we kind of joined hands on that and started expanding into different tournaments, and it's going on well right now. And we have been trying to expand it more as we grow. So let's see how that goes.
Right. I mean, the kind of work you guys have been doing for Cricket Queens is nothing short of phenomenal, right? Because not just previews, you talk about match reports, analysis, and your articles are, just fantastic. So I think, for fans, it is really a gold mine of resources with respect to women's cricket. But when we talk about the Women's Premier League right now, it's finally here. So how excited were you to, see a Women's Premier League finally happening? And in the recent times, we saw the broadcasting rights and the franchising rights also going for such a high price, right? So do you have similar expectations from the auctions that await us?
Well, I do. Look, it's a big thing, isn't it? Like, people wanted the WPL for years and years to come, and now it's finally happening. So, of course, there are more pros than cons. I know we can always focus upon the negatives here, but given the fact that it's the inaugural edition, given the fact that it is starting, that makes it awesome. So, yeah, first auction, five teams, a lot of players who have registered. It's a big thing and
Absolutely.
something that I
Yeah.
definitely look forward to.
Right. And we have a total of what? 1,525 players who have registered for this inaugural auction. And the final list was eventually brought down to 409 players. So what are your thoughts? Like, interesting roster of players?
Well, it's simply how it works. Like, we see plenty of players who put their names in the hat, and the franchises submit the list of preferred players who are then shortlisted and pruned to, say, next number of players. But I think it's a pretty decent number of players to choose from, out of which I think a maximum of 90, I think, aggregate picks. So yeah, it's probably a fair number.
Right. And when we look at the 409 players, we have 246 of who are Indians and 163 players are overseas, and we have like 8 players from associate nations. Now the total number of capped players is like what, 202, and uncapped players are 199, and 8 are from associate nations. So what did you make of it?
Yeah, like I said, it's a decent number to pick from. And I'm guessing teams would have done the scouting of the lesser-known players, or at least I hope they have. But I feel setting a core with the Indian capped plus overseas players is going to be crucial. And teams would have their eyes set on specific players to come up with a team which, so as to be a brand of cricket that they want. Well, the only drawback I would say over here are the number of associate players. I feel 8 is ridiculously less to choose fry for.
Right. And we will get to that point a little later on in the episode where we will reflect on the associate nation players. Now, when we talk about the Indian cap players, we have like 51 Indian cap players who are there in that final shortlist. So finally we get to see this Women's Premier League. So how excited are you to see them get picked up, and how's that going to unfold?
Oh, that's going to be the primary focus. I mean, initially I thought that, whenever this auction or draft or whatever happens, I thought whatever X number of teams that we've got, each one is going to have the option to go for an icon player pre-hand. But now it seems that, like, it's been thrown out in the open, no icon players, nothing. So it's so exciting to see, players like Smriti Mandhana or Harmanpreet Kaur go under the hammer.
Yeah, and bids for these players is going to be nothing short of exciting, and we're going to see some soaring prices for them. And talking about superstars, our Indian under-19 stars who recently won the World Cup in South Africa will also be a part of the auction, right? Now we have the uncapped Parshvi Chopra, Archana Devi, Tuthas Sadhu, then we have Shweta Sehrawat and Manat Kashyap. They're all going in with a base price of, I think, 10 lakhs, right? So what are your thoughts on seeing these young stars potentially getting picked by IPL franchises?
Yeah, look, we've got plenty of good names in there, like the ones you mentioned, maybe Harley Gala, Sani Kachalke, plenty more to pick from. And I'm pretty sure some of them are going to find bidders if teams are looking for long-term options who can be invested in. I would say that probably not all are ready for the senior level yet, but their development is vital, and it can only happen if they get to rub their shoulders with the senior players. they can, you know, maybe do some net sessions if not picked in the 11. And I don't see anything wrong with that either. But, you know, I would have still hoped that, say, at least one under 19 player would have been made mandatory to make it a win-win situation. And I hope it's something that can be implemented in the future.
Absolutely. And as you rightly pointed out, it's going to be a wonderful opportunity, you know, for these players to rub shoulders with international stars and our Indian players too, you know, who play for the senior team. And apart from the 246 Indians, we have, you know, a good chunk of Australian and English players, you know, who dominate that list. We have 28 Aussie players and 27 English players. So how excited are you to, you know, see them in action? Because in the Women's T20 Challenge, we have seen, you know, some good quality matches. And now with many more registering, how does that look for you?
Well, to be honest, look, if I tell you, I'd be really happy if I was the agent, because I'll tell you what, the Australians are going to get rich, that's for sure. So, you know, I expect at least anywhere between, say, 40 to 50% of the 30 OC slots, excluding the associates, to be taken up by the Aussies. But yeah, we have got top-notch players from England as well. And I feel that these are the very two countries on whom the primary focus would be placed.
Absolutely. And when we have the look at, you know, players with the 50 lakh base price, let's start with India right now. We have Harmanpreet Kaur, Smriti Mandhana, Deepti Sharma, Renuka Singh Thakur, Jemima Rodrigue, Shefali Verma, Pooja Vastrikar, Richa Ghosh, Sneh Rana, and Meghna Singh, right? So will we see tough bidding, you know, for these players, and how's that going to work?
Oh, for sure. Look, most of these players are going to pretty much have a dogfight from a majority of the franchises. But there is a small chance that teams would also be seeing a captaincy option in a few of these players. So it would make sense. Like, I saw a few tweets on Meghna Singh, in fact, about setting herself a base price that would probably see her going unsold. And I would disagree with that. Yes, I mean, she could have placed herself at, say, 30 or 40. But, you know, one needs to understand that she's a cap player with some experience, and teams would want to add that experience. So yeah, she could have placed her at 30, 40 and got picked at 60, 70 eventually. But look, here she has saved a bit of time by placing herself at the max base price, and it would eventually go for somewhat similar.
Exactly. And you know, when we look at Australia right now, they too have Ashley Gardner, Ellie Sperry, Meg Lanning, Alyssa Healy, Jess Jonasson, and Darcy Brown. And with England, they have Sophie Eccleston, Nat Silverbrand, Danny Wyatt, Kathleen Silverbrand. And from New Zealand, we have Sophie Devine. Now, again, these are class players who have, like, you know, so much experience playing in the Indian conditions. So can we expect some interesting bids coming our way?
Oh, true. Most of these players should find a place, and in fact, a bit of bidding war as well. Because you can't miss out on the experienced overseas players with a proven record. And, you know, as far as these Aussies are concerned, they are world champions. So 100% sure every name that you just took is going to find a gig. You can basically flog your overseas quota with Aussies, and you would have yourself sorted. I'm actually keen to see what, say, Laura Harris goes for, because she has smartly placed herself at 10 lakhs, which is the minimum base price. And I'm sure she's going to grab a lot of attention after her recent exploits. But yeah, look, recency bias is for real, and she could have helped herself with the performances in the WNCL and Super Smash. But I feel that irrespectively, she's going to find bidders, you know, being an X Factor player.
Right. And you know, when we look at South Africa, they Sinalo Jafta, and from West Indies we have Deandra Doughton. So could they be interesting additions to the teams, or do you think, you know, they've priced themselves so high that, you know, they might just miss the ship?
Okay, so, you know, I'd probably say that Sinalo Jafta may, you know, not have found a bit even at 30 lakhs. So, you know, by placing herself at 50 lakhs, she has effectively reduced her chances further, and it's a weird decision for a player like her. But as far as Deandra Doughton is concerned, we've got another elite pace all-rounder who's now a free agent and then can turn games single-handedly. So, yeah, I feel she would be amongst one of the top 10 expensive overseas picks.
Ooh, that's an interesting prediction. And even when we look at Zimbabwe now, there is Laureen Philly, right? So could you talk more about her? Because for most of us, you know, she's quite the unknown commodity. So you know, her placing in this 50 lakh bracket is quite a surprise. So could you tell us more about her?
That's perhaps a little bit worse than Sunalo Jafta. Okay, so she's an off-spinner from, I think, Zimbabwe, with a decent number of games at such a young age. But look, again, I have no idea what she has done with regards to a base price. Now, look, I understand that she has got a good record, but when an off-spin all-rounder like Grace Harris could put her name in the lowest bracket, I don't know why Free would opt for the highest. It's basically shooting yourself in the foot.
Absolutely. And that also brings me to this question. Now we have the 40 lakhs and the 30 lakhs bracket. So any exciting players from these lists for you, and any reason why these players didn't opt for, say, the 50 lakhs bracket?
Look, I think the lower you place yourself at, the higher the chances you would have to get picked. Now, probably it may not matter so much for most of the players in WPL because the gaps are substantially less as compared to, say, men's IPL, where the gap between the minimum base price versus the highest base price is what, somewhere around, I think, 10x. But in WPL, sorry, it's not as much. But look, I get the logic. The rationale is pretty simple. The lower you place yourself, the higher chances you create for yourself to actually find bidders. So I think it's a fair shot for those who have put it at, say, 30, 40, but those who have put it at 50, I mean, most of them, I think it's a fair shot. Like, say, someone like probably who is it? Ashley Gardner or Sophie Eccleston placing themselves at 50L makes sense. They are elite players and they are going to find bidders at the maximum base price as well. So to each its own, but the rationale behind players placing themselves at 30, 40 is that they are just increasing the chances of getting picked.
That's actually quite interesting. And even earlier in the episode, you spoke about how you felt that the players from the Associate Nations weren't enough, and that's not enough representation. Do you think there is a clear case of lack of research from the franchisees end, or were the players itself from the Associate Nations quite skeptical? Because the whole idea of an auction can be quite overwhelming, So what do you think played out there?
Look, probably I would say lack of research or, even sheer ignorance of some of the best players in the associates. I'm sure pretty much most of them would have registered the names, but take, say, Catherine Bryce for an example. She's what, world number 7 or 8 all-rounder in the T20Is. So how on earth does one justify her not getting shortlisted? So, it's been poor, if I had to put it very clearly. And the same thing could have been potentially be solved. Like, I can guarantee that if, say, one overseas spot would have been made mandatory in the playing 11 than being optional, then you would have probably seen around 20 of them getting shortlisted. So, I just can't wrap my head around some of the players who have been left out. It just doesn't make sense. And look, it's probably how I see it, and I could be wrong, but say one of the names is Tara Norris, who got shortlisted. And that's a pretty smart move that potentially, look, again, these are just my thought processes over here, but Tara Norris could probably be purely Charlotte Edwards in Mumbai's pick. So, Norris plays for Sudden Brave and Vipers, both of whom are coached by Charlotte. So, by picking Norris, they can not only add an LAP variety, but also open up playing 5 overseas in the 11. So, you could potentially see Mumbaians bidding for her, and that could be the only team who looks a little bit more serious about that one associate slot as of now.
Right. And are there any other observations that you made, or any unearthed stars on the list that perhaps might have gone unnoticed in the roster that's out as of now?
Look, barring the associates, I would say most of them have made the cut. And there are some good names in there. But look, I'm really hoping that I don't know how teams would have looked at her. I mean, probably there is a chance people would just look at the recent numbers and all that stuff. Like I mentioned, recency bias is for real. So, probably if teams ignored that particular point, and then I'm just hoping that someone like Jess Watkins finds bidders. I know she had a pretty poor Super Smash season. But if, several factors are considered, then I mean teams can have fantastic spin all-rounder who could clear the ropes with ease at the CCA. And there are many such names, but I don't know how teams are really going to go about it.
Right. I mean, it's going to be quite interesting to see the auctions unravel as well. And a little early on, we spoke about how the 50 lakhs bracket also has some players who present themselves as captaincy options. But besides that list, do you see any other potential captains who could head franchises?
Look, it really depends upon the staff that the teams have assembled. As of now, we only know it for a couple of franchises, but there is a potential that someone like Meg Lanning or Sophie Devine is going to probably be seen as a captaincy option. But, again, it depends upon who is leading the coaching staff, like someone like Rachel Haynes, who's associated with Gujarat, right? So she might as well want to go for Meg Lanning, right? It makes sense. And she could be potentially looking at Lanning as a skipper. So there are a few options, but out of the five franchises, most of them probably would be headed by the Indian players, and a couple of them might be in with a shot, like probably Lanning and Devine. That's pretty much it. Maybe Heather Knight, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, she does present herself as an interesting option. And
Yeah,
now when
exactly.
we now when we look at each team, right, they have a purse of 12 crores, and they will have to buy like a minimum of 15 players and a maximum of 18. We have five overseas player slot and one from the associate member country. So how do you think each team would want to approach the auctions? Because if you spend too much money on your overseas players, then you're emptying your pockets for the capped Indian players or even the uncapped Indian players for that matter. So what would be the strategy in mind, heading to the auction for the teams?
I think each of them would have the set plans and what brand of cricket they want to play. So they will go for the players that they think would be the most suited to playing the brand of cricket that they want. Look, I mean, the budget is quite less to begin with, so it's going to be quite a tight one to pick the players from. But let's see how it goes. I mean, we have some experienced heads in the coaching staff, so let's see what they come up with. I'm really looking forward to see what they, really plan on. Because look, someone like Charlotte Edwards is quite experienced. She has been getting gigs across the globe with several T20 teams. So, they would have the set plans, would have the set processes, and would know what really works. But of course, I mean, this is a different system. It's an auction scenario, which is not something that is common in women's cricket. So, probably it would be something that they would have to get accustomed to, and we might see a few errors as well because it's the first time, but hopefully in the future it will sort it out.
Exactly. Talking about auctions, this is like such an exciting time because this will be like the first league that will have the auctions. And even Rachel Haynes, right? She spoke about how if she was a player who was playing in the T20 World Cup and had registered for the auctions, she would actually focus more on the World Cup than like look at this because it would just simply eat up her mind space and cause her to lose focus. So do you think that this auctions happening is a real distraction for the players who are playing in the T20 World Cup? And could that have potential consequences?
Well, it couldn't have come at the worst time, could it? But well, players have bigger job at their hands, and at least a good thing is that it will be done and dusted with like within 3 or 4 days of the T20 World Cup. So it might initially be a distraction for a few teams, but once it's done, people look, they are professionals, they'll get on with everything that happens, and it might have a few repercussions, but it should sort out as the tournament progresses. And it's a good thing that we'll have the auction out of the way at the beginning of the T20 World Cup. So yeah, I think probably, they'll get along with it no matter what fate they suffer.
Right. And as we reach the end of our episode, do you have a final thought or final thoughts or a message for our listeners?
Well, not surely, to be honest, but yeah, well, let's see. I mean, WIPL is something that sorry, WPL is something that everyone wanted, and it's finally happening. I know we are probably going to get a few of those negative vibes from people. I mean, post WPL, if India loses, then again we are going to have people saying or kar lo WPL on that stuff. But but look, it's a positive thing. Everyone wanted that, and it's finally happening. So let's just enjoy and encourage everybody who's involved, and let's just hope that it gets bigger and better and leads to possibly more opportunities for women's cricket in the future across the globe.
Right. And one last question before we actually wrap up this episode. Do you wonder why they call it WPL, like Women's Premier League, and not WIPL? Like WBBL is, no, BBL's women's equivalent version is WBBL, and the 100 is like not changed its name, right? But why so for the women's equivalent version of the IPL?
I've got no idea about that. They could have possibly just stuck with WIPL,
Yeah.
and it would make sense, right? IPL is already a product that sells so well, so why not just have WIPL and make it pretty clear cut and let it reap benefits from IPL? But I don't
Exactly.
know, they might have some thought process. I don't know, it's hard to come to terms with that, but I guess it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, we just take it as a win that the league is happening finally, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you remember, then initially there were talks that it was going to be called as what, Women's T20 League or something. So WIPL is certainly better than that.
Exactly. And on that note, thank you so much, Jeet, for joining me on the podcast and sharing some remarkable insights. Here's hoping, I can have you back on the podcast and, we can talk a lot more women's cricket. Here's wishing you all the best for the cricket season that awaits us. And until next time, take care and bye.
Oh, it was a lot of fun, yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Cheers. With this, we draw curtains on our discussion. Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning into this episode and for your unstinted support. Please follow and press the bell icon on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast on Google Podcasts for the latest episode updates and stay tuned. Do check out @NeverOnTheBackFoot on Instagram and @NeverOnTheBackOn on Twitter for the latest facts, terminology, retweets, fresh tweets, and a lot more that's coming up this cricket season just for you. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, and a lot of other platforms. So please stay tuned. Until next time, stay safe and take care. Bye for now, listeners.